Okay, I'll grant the makers of Yesterday their premise. One day the Beatles are erased from our collective consciousness, but one man somehow remembers their music and becomes a superstar by recording all the band's hits himself. Before he can say Pete Best, he's opening for Ed Sheeran. Record executives are circling him like sharks. He's labeled the Second Coming, the artist who's going to change music as we know it, and he hasn't even put out an official album yet. I mean, sure, why not? I buy into more outlandish plots on a weekly basis. But I do have to admit that it's a little hard to believe that 21st century audiences, who don't know John, Paul, George, and Ringo from Adam, would go totally wild for a no-name guy's warmed-over cover of I Wanna Hold Your Hand, which they of course wouldn't recognize as a cover, but would most certainly recognize as warmed over. We come to learn that David Bowie, Bruce Springsteen, and even the Rolling Stones still exist in this universe, so would a random guy doing an all-ukulele version of Here Comes the Sun really become the next big thing? I don't so much object to the premise on logical grounds, because what logic? I object to the fact that director Danny Boyle and screenwriter Richard Curtis haven't developed this promising idea beyond its most basic complications. And besides, the conceit is really a Trojan horse for a drippy, predictable love story, one that Curtis could have written in his sleep and most likely did. They've made a wannabe music biz satire with a bleeding rom-com heart, and those two modes don't mix. Hamish Patel is Jack Malik, the guy who becomes a musical messiah by way of those Fab Four tunes. As Yesterday begins, he's a struggling singer-songwriter, playing to empty boardwalks and barrooms that treat his originals as background noise. Even when he gets a spot at a big music festival, it's in an empty tent. Jack's manager Ellie, played by Lily James, a kindly schoolteacher who is obviously in love with him, begs him to stick to it, but Jack has had enough humiliation. The night he decides he's finally sticking a pin in his rock star dreams, there's an international blackout, during which Jack is hit by a bus as he rides his bike home. This confluence of events somehow erases all traces of the Beatles' very existence, which Jack uses to his advantage. The record executives soon come calling, trying to shoehorn him into a tidy pop star package, all while Ellie watches from the sidelines. Of course, the Beatles' songs are structural and melodic marvels, and everyone in the film seems to recognize that. But the Beatles didn't become the world's greatest rock band on the strength of their songs alone. They had an almost supernatural musical chemistry, their arrival coincided with a number of shifting cultural attitudes, and their sound evolved and deepened over a series of increasingly experimental albums. The movie's supposition that the Beatles' work is great regardless of who's performing it is almost delusional. Can you think of a single Beatles cover you'd rather listen to than the real thing? But there are some nice comic touches in the film. Because Jack has nothing but his memory to recreate those classic songs, he hits the occasional snag, particularly when he has trouble recalling the hyper-specific lyrics to Eleanor Rigby. There's a great dig at some of the other popular bands that wouldn't exist without the Beatles' influence. Kate McKinnon brings her typical bug-eyed mania to the role of Jack's new image-obsessed manager, and Ed Sheeran shows up as himself in a refreshingly self-deprecating turn. That's to be expected of a Richard Curtis script, as are all the romantic comedy tropes. The emotional epiphany in The Pouring Rain, the mad dash to catch a departing train, the final plea for reconciliation because all you need really is love. He and Boyle aren't all that concerned about how the world would really look without the Beatles' seismic cultural impact. For instance, what would Liverpool really be like had those lovable lads never put it on the world map? That all takes a backseat to a wet-eyed romance that it's never all that convincing, and moves at a snail's pace to its obvious conclusion. There's an old story that John Lennon originally wrote Help as a dirge, reflecting his own fractured mental state at the height of Beatlemania, and that the band later sped it up and injected it with a vitality that belied its lyrics. This movie could have benefited from the same approach. It needs more zip, more juice, the same kind of energy that defined the Beatles' own feature films. It's curiously mid-tempo when it should be humming along with the efficiency of an undeniable pop gem, but it only barely carries a tune. For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Nathan Weinbender.